is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. All right, so listen, here at America Out Loud, we are being just inundated so much with people who have real questions, the confusion out there within our rights and our Constitution, and with this pandemic, and the overreach of government is of incredible concern to about every American. The comments and questions we get in here, I can't even put it into context for you. And people are utterly confused. They're not sure what they need to do or not to do. The information is a lot of misinformation out there, and there's an uncertainty that folks have. When the president spoke, he spoke about, in fact, his words were, this is not about freedom or personal choice, he says. That caught a lot of people's attention. Typically, it is all about that. Let me tell you about attorney Thomas Rentz first. He's the lead attorney in several major cases that have been brought across our great country, a lot of different states. And nationally against the CDC and the DHHS, Homeland Security, and Anthony Fauci himself as well, which we'll be talking about today regarding the forced vaccine mandates, the censorship that's happening, the lockdowns, these mask requirements and vaccine requirements, business closures, a lot of the false information coming out. So there's a lot about that. Looking forward to talking to Attorney Rentz on that. I want to play for you first a clip. I want you to hear right from the president himself.
And a distinct minority of Americans, supported by a distinct minority of elected officials, are keeping us from turning the corner. This is not about freedom or personal choice. It's about protecting yourself and those around you. So tonight, I'm announcing that the Department of Labor is developing an emergency rule to require all employers with 100 or more employees that together employ over 80 million workers to ensure their workforces are fully vaccinated or show a negative test at least once a week.
So you're hearing there some excerpts from the president's speech regarding his mandates on vaccines. Let's bring on the program now, attorney Thomas Rentz, and want to welcome you to the program, Tom, to Viewpoint. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
When the president says, where I really want to start is, I think the words that got under about every American's skin, which is, this is not about freedom or personal choice, was the president's words. What I want to ask you, Tom, is where does personal choice start and personal choice stop, I'm wondering? I mean, the president is saying that unvaccinated Americans are harming others. So what about that personal choice?
There is absolutely nowhere, anywhere even insinuated in the Constitution, the founding documents, or anywhere else, any sort of obligation on one person to limit their rights to protect those of another. This is absurd. Now, you do have certain instances in the law. If you're a parent, if you're a doctor, you're supposed to do right by your patient. If you're a parent, you got to take care of your kids. But the idea that this isn't about personal choice, that individual liberties somehow are subjugate to the collective whole, that's communism. There's no other way to say it. There's no other way to look at it. And our president is doing something that back in the 50s, he would have been arrested and tried for treason on. It is absolutely unconscionable.
Well, through our history, anytime there's been any kind of a vaccine or anything at all out there, it has always been about personal choice. You make the decision. But I love the way you context there when you're saying, well, now they're asking you to do something for the collective. So you're doing it for, I guess, some other folks or what have you, whatever it is, but not your own self-being. And there are a lot of people who are having personal challenges. And of course, we talk about religious exemptions. We talk about other personal type of exemptions. But really, these are harming people as well. And the pressure and the comments and questions coming in from people about this are just over the top. I mean, people are really, really unsettled with this vaccine business. Now, the president calling him out, will he get away with this? I think you just say, well, it's unconstitutional. Who's going to stop him, though? It seems like they are pushing the envelope in ways that we've never seen it pushed before, Tom.
Well, I'm going to tell you that, you know, I don't know if I'm going to stop him. I don't know who's going to stop him. But I can tell you that, excuse me, that we are most certainly going to do everything that can be done to stop him. This is not a communist nation, despite Joe Biden's best desires and the people around him. So we're going to fight this in court as much as possible. But I'm going to make real clear here. If the people don't stand up and absolutely reject this outright, it's going to happen. Okay. The court by itself, it's not enough. We, the people, have to make clear we are not a communist nation. We will not be subjected to the collective good, for lack of a better term. And we're just absolutely not going to submit. This is the most egregious attack on our freedoms and our liberties that there's ever been. Our president has sold out to communist China in their interest. He sold out to the quasi-Marxist interest or dictatorial interest of some of his big business cronies and pharma. And at this point, he should not only be impeached, he should probably be imprisoned.
The mandate specifically about employers, now this is a wide sweeping mandate. He's saying that anybody with more than 100 workers will require them to be vaccinated or tested for the virus weekly. He says it's affecting about 80 to 100 million Americans and roughly 17 million workers at health facilities that receive federal Medicare or Medicaid will also have to be fully vaccinated. The key to what you say there, I think, is so vital when you say, well, will he get away with it or not? Well, it depends if we, the people, stand up. It does seem like they're pushing the envelope a little bit more each time, Tom. They're just pushing to see what they can get away with. You almost get the sense that we're being tested right now. The Constitution surely is being tested, but the American people are being tested to how much they will give up of their freedoms and will they stand otherwise for what America has always stood for. Is that not the right context here?
Oh, I think that's absolutely part of it. I think there's several things that are happening here. Okay. So first of all, I would say that the number one thing that's occurring here is this is a no-lose thing for him in his mind. He doesn't care if he loses in court. This is plainly unconstitutional and illegal, but he doesn't care. I mean, he's just going to stick his Justice Department lawyers on it. And if he loses, so what? And, you know, the thing is no matter what happens, this bully tactic works because, you know, there's going to be some people that are going to just say, well, it's not worth fighting, right? Mm-hmm. So the question's going to be, you know, what does he lose? So that's the first tier of this. The second tier, I think, is very much related to what you talked about in the beginning. I mean, everything he's done is an epic disaster. Afghanistan is one of the most horrible things I've ever seen in my life. He needs to change the subject. There's a bunch of news coming out on the elections, and I've not been really involved in the election stuff. But when I hear that they've literally physically found hundreds of thousands of fake ballots, I mean, you know, that's not my topic, but you know, that kind of raises some concerns given how close the election was in some states. So you've got that. You've got the border crisis, which I don't even know what to say about. I mean, you know, the sex trafficking and the violence that's occurring on the border is mind blowing. He needed to change the subject. In his mind, this was a no lose thing. Although I do think there is a little bit of a loss that he didn't account for in the fact that this has really upset the American people. But it is also the third part is exactly what you said. It ties into the other two. Let's see how far we can push the American people. because, you know, we've had this very slow incremental shift towards socialism over the last several decades. Well, you know, what's the harm in hurrying it up, right? What's the harm? Mm-hmm. You know, the idea is that, you know, they move us 10 steps to the left, and if they have to move back a couple steps to the right, well, they're still ahead. And, you know, it's just how much will people tolerate? And I'm going to tell you right now that if the people don't recognize how far away from the Constitution we've actually gotten, mm-hmm. and say enough is enough, it's time now. We need to start talking about constitutional amendments to get us back to where we were. Mm-hmm. We need to start talking about massive, massive change. Our country has to reform. In my lifetime, if we don't restructure and get back to our Constitution, our freedoms are gone.
The challenge right now is they're not incremental steps anymore. They're so significant. What's being done is so far out of the realm of possibilities that it's almost a surreal moment for most Americans. One of the other things that talked about on the beyond the vaccination requirements were the mask requirements. He's back to the mask thing. And he's suggesting that they want to double the federal fines for airline passengers who refuse to wear a mask on flights or to maintain any kind of face cover requirement on federal property in accordance with the CDC guidelines. You know, organizations like the CDC right now, Tom, are playing God. They're actually doing things. They've actually been empowered so much like they've never been before. And they're making decisions for areas that they have no involvement in whatsoever and shouldn't be at all. Again, back to the pushback of this sort of thing. Can they get away with that by double fining people and putting the pressure on with that to make you submit to what their requirements are? Can they get away with it?
Well, it depends on whether the people will let them. I mean, just say no to masks, just say no to vax. You know, here's this really implicates one of the most fundamental problems in the United States. So going back to the early 20th century, there were a number of, and even in the 1800s, there were a number of cases in the Supreme Court that allowed the Congress to delegate legislative authority to the executive branch. Mm-hmm. And that created the administrative world that we live in, the CDC, the DHHS, all these different alphabet soup agencies throughout the federal government. That is the single greatest threat to American freedom that there is. Nobody talks about it because it's complicated and it's not something that's really easy to wrap your head around. But these people are not elected. They're not accountable. You can't fire them because they have a constitutional interest in their job. I mean, the federal bureaucracy is the swamp. The federal bureaucracy is the group that is taking over our country. And, you know, people are saying, well, can the CDC do that? Well, here's the problem. The EPA, the CDC, the DHHS, pick your letters. They're all part of the same cabal. This is all one giant corrupt group. The corruption throughout these federal bureaucracies is mind-blowing, and you can't get them out every couple of years by an election. You can do news stories on it, but look at how difficult this is. Look at how they've indemnified these people. They've granted immunity from lawsuits. These people are unelectable, unaccountable bureaucrats, and they have the power that no elected official could ever have because they're just immune from everything. Fauci is the most corrupt monster in the world. If I want to sue him, I potentially lose all sorts of things. They could sanction me personally. Because that's how the law is. These people are supposed to be civil servants, not civil monarchs. And until we reform and get rid of this federal bureaucratic nightmare and say, listen, if you're not elected, you don't make laws because I want to get you out. You know, if I want a free, fair election every 2, 4, 6 years, whatever, and I want to be able to vote you out. And if you're not elected, you don't have power. These decisions by the Supreme Court were some of the worst decisions in history. And they were really the beginning of the end of freedom in this country. And like I said, we need some federal amendments. We need to rein in these people. There needs to be accountability. If you're committing fraud or malfeasance, you should, and you work for the federal government, there needs to be a very clear and very easy path forward for anyone that wants to file suit against you to do so, to hold you accountable for that sort of thing. You cannot grant immunity to federal bureaucrats who aren't elected. It's abhorrent.
Yeah, I mean, the empowerment of the bureaucrats is a whole big conversation we should be having, and you're so right to point it out. In the final thought here from you, the lawsuits. Let's give the folks a perspective. It looks like you'll be involved, let me ask you, will you be involved in some of this pushback that's happening, and what do you expect on lawsuits? I would imagine, if I'm guessing, there will be a ton of lawsuits pushing back from many companies and organizations against the federal government. Is that what we anticipate?
Yeah, I'm sure there will. And I'm going to offer some perspective to anyone listening. If you are an attorney representing someone on this, please, 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 I've been, I can't claim to be the best attorney out there, but I can tell you I've worked on this 24/7 for a year and a half. Do not concede to the facts. Do not concede that this is a pandemic and the worst crisis ever. Do not concede to the fact that the vaccines are safe and effective. They are not. The pandemic is not what they've claimed. If you concede to the facts, it makes it very difficult for a judge to say, well, but we're going to kill millions of people otherwise. We can't have that. The facts are false. They're fraudulent. We have the data. We have the information. I will give it freely to anyone who wants it. It's available free. So please, if you're fighting this, make sure that you do not concede to those. And the law is clear. We have a fundamental right to bodily integrity. It's established under several case lines. I will discuss that with anybody who wants to discuss it. I need the people who are going to fight this to do it well. And we, the people, please, if you see your governor, your lawyer, your whatever, filing these cases, tell them you need to do your homework and fight this the right way, because there's a lot of guys out there that have brought cases where they said, yeah, it's the worst pandemic ever, but you don't have the right to do this. And the judges are human beings. The judges have a hard time thinking that they might be responsible for millions of deaths. So you can't do it that way. So, I'm absolutely going to be involved. I'm going to fight this until I've won or can't fight any further. I'm working on which of the 50 lawsuits that need filed I'm going to file next right now, and more to come for sure.
Yeah, remarkable. Tom, thank you. Let me give the website for attorney Tom Renz. Is Renz, R-E-N-Z, as a zebra, -law.com. Renz-law.com is, you find out more about the firm there. Back to what Tom was just saying about follow-up questions, data, and I believe Tom Renz and his circle there of folks he's working with, they are really, really involved, heavily intense in data and stuff they have on this. And as you said, if you need something to ask, again, go there, or you can email us here at talk@americaoutloud.com, as many of you do. And we will also get the information to attorney Tom Renz. A tremendous thank you for him. First time I had the pleasure of speaking with him, and impressive would be surely an understatement. Really well said, the thoughts and comments he puts out there. Well, listen, we are going to take a quick pause here, but we're going to be back with Mark Gregorian, the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Haven't talked to Mark in a while. I'm looking forward to picking that up. Stay right there, my fellow Americans. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
This is Dr. Peter McCullough. Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19? We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the immune super boost that I need. Go to healthycell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Join you back here on Viewpoint this Sunday, and it is yours truly here, Malcolm Out Loud. Thank you for being with us on this 20th anniversary we see of the attacks of 9/11. I want to talk about some of the immigration, about the Afghan refugees and what's happening there, what the numbers look like and all of that. Let's do that with Mark Krigorian joins me. He is executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. They're an independent, nonpartisan research organization doing some of the best work on immigration I've ever seen in the country is the Center for Immigration Studies, for sure, CIS.org. You get a lot there. Mark, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And let's start with the Afghani refugees. And I don't think a lot of people are focusing on this specifically. What are the numbers and what's the process now to happen? How does this impact us here?
The evacuation from Kabul brought out something like 120,000 people, some of them Americans, obviously, and green card holders, but all, the overwhelming majority were Afghans. We flew them to our bases in various places in the Middle East and Germany and elsewhere. Of those that we brought out, more than 50,000 as of this week have been flown to the United States, supposedly, fully vetted and all the rest of it. And there are tens of thousands more coming. Those 120,000 we brought out, some of them were probably going to, you know, France or England or something. We were not going to know the specific numbers until they're done, because even the government doesn't know the actual numbers. But the president had said that, refugee groups in the U.S. should be ready for 50,000, resettle 50,000 people from Afghanistan. We've already passed that, and there's tens of thousands more who are going to be coming. They're taken mainly to military bases, and supposedly they're vetted and all the rest of it. But what does vetting really mean when, you know, they're coming from a country with very primitive systems, in other words, documents and the rest of it. And at least when we were running Afghanistan, we were occupying it, we could maybe check out some of the claims that people made about who they were. Now we can't. What are we going to do? Call up the Kabul DMV and the Taliban will tell us? Of course not. So it's not likely we're going to be finding much of interest in doing this vetting, even if there's a problem. And, you know, most people, probably there isn't. But in the odd instance where we do find something wrong, and we have a couple of times found some problems, what are we going to do with those people? Send them back to Afghanistan? No, we're going to end up letting them in. Not right away, maybe. But for instance, there are two people who actually made it to the U.S. who were then found some kind of incriminating information. Maybe fingerprints of theirs on a bomb in Afghanistan, because we keep records of that sort of thing. So what we did was we sent them to Kosovo in the Balkans, because Kosovo is, I guess we probably bribed them with a lot of money to, you know, to do this kind of thing. But we didn't send them to Kosovo permanently. In other words, to get rid of them and have them be the problem of that country. that would be okay. Kosovo just agreed to have them for up to 1 year, and then we're going to have to take them back. So basically, even the people that we find bad information about, we're going to end up just letting go into the United States. And they may wait a little while to do it, so people will focus on some other issue and the news will move on. Okay. But all of those people that we took out of Afghanistan, every one of them is going to be on the streets of the United States, if not immediately, then within a few months.
Okay. There's two kinds of people in my mind we're talking about here, and I want to remind folks, Mark. One is the Afghan partner refugee has the proper documentation. These are people there's been a lot of talk about that we've left a lot of those people behind, which are under grave situations with the Taliban. There are those people who may be more legit, but then the other problem is, as you suggest and are saying, how many really with terrorist concepts or ideas are mixed in with the people? When we looked at those packed planes, and they were packed like sardines, it's ironic because, Mark, afterward, when the Americans were trying to get out of there, people with proper documentation and couldn't get out, the State Department said, well, we can't do that because we can't go through all of their papers and document them and what have you. And we don't want them to land at our U.S. military bases, which got a lot of eyebrows when they did exactly that and then some on the other side. So those two kinds of players. Let's be clear, the legitimate Afghan partner has the papers, that's one, but the other that doesn't have all that and could have some ideas for terrorists, that's the big problem. I mean, isn't that what we're looking at here?
Yes, of course it is. There were, in fact, it's even the Afghans who worked with us, right. There's sort of two categories of them. The first is the one the politicians always talk about, which is the military translators and interpreters. These were the guys who, you know, put on the Kevlar and went outside the wire with our soldiers. Those people, we kind of made a deal with that if things went south, they get to move here. And that's a deal we need to keep. The problem is, there's just not that many people like that. Just in general, even the ones we left behind, there aren't that many, and we shouldn't have been leaving them behind. But there's the visa category for those people is only for 50 a year anyway. There's just not that many. The other category of allies, as they call them, Afghan allies, are people who are civilian workers or even maybe contractors, people who work for a construction company that built a U.S. base. Those people all get to have visas to come to the United States if they can get them. But even in that instance, the people we took out of Afghanistan, the majority of them didn't cover even those kinds of allies, so-called people who worked with us from Afghanistan. They were most of the people we got out of Kabul were basically random people who bribed or pushed their way through the checkpoints and scrambled aboard the airplanes. And most of the people who did help us, who would be eligible for these kind of visas, we left behind, along with, you know, a couple hundred American citizens.
Yeah. All right. Let me shift over now to, I definitely got to get your perspective, Mark. I've been thinking about you with the southern border and what's happening. There's really been no attention there. One thing we're seeing is there's a lot of stories that are being deflected. They're not being focused on. And when they change the narrative, which they're trying to do right now from Afghanistan to COVID mandates, the same thing happens with the southern border. Before I get over to the immigration and what we've learned from 9/11, give us an update on what really is happening there at the border, because the last I seen, the numbers were unbelievably alarming. We've never seen numbers like this before. Can you tell us?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers of people being arrested at the border have been increasing steadily. They jumped when Biden was inaugurated, and they've been going up ever since. And it's, and, you know, when you talk to the migrants or the smugglers themselves, they just say, yeah, it's a Democrat, you know, Trump is gone, and so we know the Democrats will let us in. In other words, all the line about from this administration about, well, it's seasonal and this is just the way it is, it's nonsense. They're specifically responding to President Biden's comments and policies. The numbers in July were about 200,000 of people who were taken, you know, into custody by the Border Patrol or by the customs people at the ports of entry. Mm-hmm. The majority of them were let into the country, and we may or may never see them again, you know, in immigration court or whatever. For the numbers for August haven't officially been released, mm-hmm. but they've been leaked, and they were down a few thousand, but it's still almost 200,000. I mean, because of the weather, if nothing else, I mean, August down there is brutal.
Right.
So, but it's still, and the majority of them were let go into the United States.
Well, they're flying them to other cities. They're busing right. them. I've seen the videos, and yep. it is truly, truly alarming what's happening here. I see we see the Supreme Court with the stay in Mexico policy and all that. I mean, there have been some setbacks, a few, not too many, for the Biden regime there. But is there any turn in this, change in the momentum of this? I get the feeling, and I want to ask you, Mark, I get the sense that there's not a hell of a lot. This southern border is just an open sieve right now, and it's going to continue to be that way until the Biden administration is removed from power. I don't see anything stopping this in their way, is there?
No, it's going to, I mean, there'll be some fluctuations, some ups and downs, but right. no, I don't, I mean, the administration is simply not serious about dealing with the border. They don't think that the problem is hundreds of thousands of people surging illegally across the border. For them, the problem is that they're not managing it and processing people quickly and comfortably enough. That's what they see as their goal, their job. And, you know, that is not the job that he took an oath to do. Maybe this administration will realize what a political disaster they're setting up for themselves and maybe back away. I don't know. But if they do, their supporters on the left will go crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It sounds like a trade-off compared to them wanting more Democrat voters, as many people accuse them of, versus what you say right there. Hard to say. All right, so we're at the, let's talk now about the 20, wow, I can't believe 20 years, Mark, since 9/11. I still remember the moment that all happened. I remember being stunned and having to get in front of a television and watch what had transpired there. Let's talk about the role of immigration, that 9/11, what resulted from that, and what progress have we made in the last 20 years, Mark?
9/11, when you get right down to it, was a failure of our immigration policy and border control policy. The 19 hijackers, none of them should have gotten visas, just as normal people. In other words, even if we didn't know they were terrorists, they shouldn't have gotten visas. I think five of them had become illegal aliens or visa overstayers. They had gotten, between the 19 of them, I think they'd gotten 28 or 29 driver's licenses, real legitimate ones, from states that were really lax about keeping track of that. One of them came in on a student visa and never showed up to the school he was supposed to go to. And nobody knew about it. Nobody told anybody about it. It was just, it was people just shrugged and, oh, well. So there were a whole variety of immigration failures, and fixing any one of those could well have, broken up the whole plot. And so after 9/11, the 9/11 Commission, some people recommend that, remember that, they did an extensive study about what caused this, what kinds of things should we do. And there were a whole bunch of recommendations about tightening up what they called terrorist travel, because they didn't want to use the word immigration or borders, because, you know, that would apparently scare people or maybe get them dirty looks at the country club. So they called it terrorist travel. It's all immigration stuff. Some of those things that they recommended, we did start to do. Congress and the administration at the time made a real effort to sort of set in motion and create systems that would fix some of these holes. The problem is, over 20 years, some of those efforts basically aren't done yet. And they're not done yet because powerful interest groups they want the borders to be loose and porous. It's not because they're terrorists. It's because anything that you do to tighten up the immigration system for security purposes also is going to keep out regular illegal aliens. And so business interests, ethnic chauvinist groups and others don't want those things. And as we're 20 years away from 9/11, they figure, well, people will forget and we'll be able to just stop those things. And they've succeeded. You know, we had rules about tightening up state driver's licenses. Well, you know, some of them did get tighter. There's no question about it. But it's kind of petered out because, you know, people don't, a lot of interests don't want illegal immigrants not to be able to get licenses. That's what it boils right down to. We have Congress mandated a system to check in foreign visitors, which we always did, and we do better now than we used to, but also to check them out when they leave. Because if you don't know who has left, you don't know who's still here as an illegal alien. That system is still 20 years later, not actually worked. So in a piece I wrote for National Review, I basically said that a lot of the measures we took, immigration control measures after 9/11, are still half-baked. And by half-baked, I didn't mean that they were, you know, poorly conceived. I meant that they were put in the oven and they never got finished. They were never finished being cooked, basically. And they're still like that to this day.
Mark, thank you. You are always a clarion voice for this. And I want to remind folks again to go to cis.org. There's a treasure trove of information there on immigration policies in our country. And you hear the work that Mark is doing around the nation and his team. I mean, he's got an incredible group of folks there. So check that out as well there. I'd like you to meet next here a gentleman, a former interpreter for the U.S. Army, and that is Fanu Milat. He was born in Kabul, Afghanistan. His family is back there as well, and want to welcome you to Viewpoint this Sunday, Fanu.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. And so your work as an interpreter for the United States Army, before I get to that, I do want to talk about that. Let's talk about your family who is back in Afghanistan. Give us some perspective. Are they good there? Are they trying to get out? What's happening back there?
Yes, they're currently at a hideout. They're hiding somewhere where no one has the location and trying to stay as much out of public as they can. And yes, of course, they are looking for many ways to get out of Afghanistan for a safer place. And I'm also working here in the United States trying to find a way to help them evacuate Afghanistan.
So, Fanu, like them, like many, many others, like thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, I'm sure, of Afghanis whose life is in jeopardy with the Taliban now in control, is the concern that there is a connection between you as an interpreter for the United States Army and the family? Is that the problem or the question?
Yes, of course, because when you work for the U.S. forces, as an interpreter, you are considered as an infidel servant for the U.S. forces or servant for the United States government, and you and your family are sentenced to death. That's a high crime for the Taliban, for the terrorist groups in Afghanistan. So there is completely a connection between the interpreter and his family, and the family is completely at risk due to interpreters work for the U.S. government.
And can I assume, Fanu, that your name is on a list and all they have that information?
Yes.
Any idea, do you have any idea of what the numbers are? I don't know that you have this information, but any idea of how many folks like your family, Afghanis, are trying to get out of there? Any idea?
Based on what I have learned, there are more than thousands of people like myself and their family members who are stranded in Afghanistan and trying to find a way to get out for a safer place.
Yeah. See, the thing that you said so well a moment ago that people need to understand is that many of these folks are our Afghani partners who put their lives at risk for exactly what you said, because then they're considered infidels and they are up for a high crime, which is death with the Taliban. And as people know, they don't even blink an eye or think a second time before taking a life is nothing to these people. That's what they seem to do. You grew up in Afghanistan. Let's talk about your time as an interpreter, which was a few years back now with the United States Army. What was that like working with our military as an interpreter there?
It was a great experience. It was very risky. But seeing that other countries, especially the United States, coming in your country and trying to bring peace and security in your country, that feeling of responsibility start forming in you that you should be giving back to your country and to U.S. forces too. That's one of the main reasons that I started working for the U.S. forces as an interpreter.
So I think a lot of people were really hoping that the turnout of Afghanistan would turn out better after 20 years there. But like with yourself now and your family and so many others, Fanu, are they how unsettled? They've got to be unsettled with the way this all turned out, because as you just said, a lot of people had pride that with the military there and the investment of time, blood, treasure that the United States had, that the turnout would have been better. It didn't work out that way, though, did it?
Actually, it did. Around 70 to 80%. Since the United States and other countries came to Afghanistan on 2001, we have seen a lot of positive changes. We have seen Afghanistan was getting secure and peaceful. People were working to bring their dreams in reality. And that was really helping the peace and security in Afghanistan. And Afghanistan was very going forward until the August 15th, when Taliban took over the country and everything was gone. Everything was gone. All the accomplishments.
Yeah, you know, I so appreciate your honesty. I did not expect, I'm thrilled to hear what you say there. I didn't expect that you would have that position. There's a lot of hostilities out there and people are very upset with the way things happen, but you put a different perspective on it, which I think most Americans would appreciate hearing your honesty and truth there. I want to give you best wishes and hope for your family and all the things you're trying to do. I know it's very risky, and I know in trying to get your loved ones out of there, and I wish you much luck, my friend. We'll talk again.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
It is a pleasure, Fanu. And all right, so let's do this, my fellow Americans. Dr. Li Mengyang is standing by. We're going to talk to her about the latest thing out of Wuhan, China, and the lies, really, the documentation now, the smoking gun, if you will, about Fauci. So we'll take that up next, as well as a very interesting campaign coming out of China on social media I want to touch on as well. We'll pick all that up next as Viewpoint rolls on. It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Welcome back to Viewpoint this Sunday. Well, you see the reports this past week about the U.S. funding research. Now, listen, there's been a lot of speculation on this, surely over the past couple of years, but let me assure you right now, my fellow Americans, this is far more than speculation at this point. In fact, the reports are confirmed, and there have been, call it a smoking gun, but the release from The Intercept this past week was quite stunning. And this was, and let me tell you, this was in connection with a Freedom of Information Act. And now when you hear that, you know that what that means is they have sued the necessary parties. This is what The Intercept did. And they were able to get information from the National Institute of Health, the NIH. And this is normally stuff they don't want released. But when you're sued for it in court and through the Freedom of Information Act, which you see others do, like the CIS, which we had on earlier for immigration, Gregorian, and you see that with Tom Fitton a lot. You'll see these groups do this, and they're very successful at it. So let's talk about that next year. Let me bring on there one of our terrific commentators and writers, and you know her well. Dr. Lee Meng-Yun is here. She's an independent virologist and whistleblower who is surely been on the front lines of calling out the CCP and all the decept and the untruths, the lies, the bull-faced lies that have been being told about this virus. But, you and I have talked quite a bit, Dr. Lee Meng-Yun, about the Wuhan Institute of Virology in Wuhan. But this latest report from The Intercept, let me say, here's what I have here, and then I want you to talk about it. So one of the grants awarded by the NIH to the EcoHealth Alliance, okay, is amounted to over almost $700,000. And this study, by the way, was called the Understanding the Risk of Bat Coronavirus Emergence. Now, if you combine that grant with others, they have a total of over $3 million that the Wuhan Institute of Virology has used in part to identify and alter the bat coronaviruses likely to infect humans. You have studied this greatly. This has been really in your wheelhouse of talking about. Tell us the importance of this information from the Intercept and about the virology lab and the NIH, please.
So the released the grant support from NIAID through the EcoHealth recently, actually they tell people that China managing to stealing your money through this very scientific way and to use it, use your technology and use your people to support China's unrestricted bioweapon program for a long time. This is not the first one they support in Wuhan. This is not the last one they support the CCP. If you just check the two grants released by the Intercept, one is already finished from 2014 to 2019. The other one just start, I mean, from 2020 to 2025. And also among them, not only people in Wuhan involved, also the top China, the academia, academic, this kind of spy, you can call it agent, they are involved, and which I have identified 1 year ago, and this is just verified. So Americans should understand that China is manipulating all these regulations and also playing their tricks using such hidden way to stealing and to harm you. This is just very little piece of the evidence. If you study it, you will see more than Wuhan, more than Batwoman, more than coronavirus, they are doing gain of function and turns them back to the normal, beyond traditional bioweapon they are going to use.
Yeah. What's most egregious about this, Dr. Yun, is that we helped fund it. And of course, Fauci has continued to deny. In fact, Senator Rand Paul is consistently in Fauci's face in a very big way. The documents here now, there's a gentleman, Richard Elbright. He's a biologist at the Rutgers University. He wrote this out on social media. He said, the materials confirm the grants supported the construction in Wuhan of the novel SARS-related coronaviruses that combined a spike gene with one coronavirus with genetic information from another coronavirus and confirmed with resultant viruses could infect human cells. Now, they went on to say the documents made it clear that assertions by the NIH director, Francis Collins, and the NIAID director, Tony Fauci, that the NIH did not support gain-of-function research or potential pandemic pathogen enhancement at Wuhan are untruthful. So they're saying, they're using the words, Dr. Yun, they're untruthful, meaning they're lies, that they had every bit of involvement in this. Now, Fauci continues to deny this and push back. I mean, it's pretty obvious now to everybody that he was involved in this funding and he was involved in this, but yet there's no recourse, there's no punishment. He has stayed in power. I mean, this is wrong, is it not?
Malcolm, let me tell you that Fauci, Peter Daszak, these people never be innocent. I mean, they have done the things the Americans should ask them, and also the world, the other people should ask them about. But the thing here is, why they can deny is because they keep telling you, they keep telling Rand Paul and Americans that this is not gain of function. This is not as the term you talk about. See, because according to my investigation, based on CCP's unrestricted bioweapon program documents, I recently obtained more, and they clearly mentioned that how they changed, they manipulate the term of gain of function, and the surveillance of gain of function changed during last 20 years. You know, let me emphasize that the way Fauci and other people can be so confident to tell you that, oh, we didn't do gain function, we didn't support it, it's because the term of gain of function is changed. Okay, for example, in one People's Liberation Army's document, when they study it and develop the strategy, they talk about it can be used as dual use or change it to enhance function. And then that is get a void of the surveillance of the gain of function. And they also spend over 20 years from WHO, from NIH, from CDC, and they start to change the idea of the scientists and doctors, let them accept that, okay, maybe just change some spike protein is something normal, and this stuff just enhance, not gain function. Oh, okay, they are studying coronavirus in bat because they are doing it for biodefense or just to protect us. So they manipulate this concept, and the people accept. It's like nowadays, most people will accept only vaccine, inject it, it will prevent all the disease. So the thing is, when it goes to the level of the law, people focus on the term. They change the concept. They use other term to change it, replace it, and change people's opinions about that. That's the way, very cunning way, that Chinese Communist Party try to use to get avoid all this kind of surveillance or punishment. That's why they called it non-traditional bioweapon strategies, which I called unrestricted.
Yeah. All right. One other thing too, the grant, I want folks to know, was initially awarded for a 5-year period to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And it was President Trump and the Trump administration that suspended it. That was in April of 2020. They suspended that grant, just so everybody is aware of that. But that was a 5-year period, a grant and all. I know there's a lot more on this story, but I don't want to miss out on talking to you about this other on Viewpoint. I want folks to know. So this next story is quite alarming. It's being called a pro-People's Republic of China network of hundreds and hundreds of inauthentic accounts on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and many, many others. And what they're doing is they're using the social media platforms and other forums to mobilize protests, physical protests, if you will, around COVID-19 concerns. They're creating a lot of hostilities, in other words, just like they've done with racism in our country. They're doing that around things like COVID-19. It's part of a state-backed operation aimed at undermining. They even went ahead. You remember when all that was going on in Hong Kong, all the protests? This group was also involved in that. Well, there's a cybersecurity group here in the U.S., Mandiant Threat Intelligence. They found evidence that this group, the pro-China group behind the protests, they've expanded all of this now and are very aggressive in how they're ginning up fear and ginning up a lot of lies and untruths in media. Now, Dr. Li Mingyang, you've been targeted yourself. You're targeted all the time on social media. And this group tries to target you and discredit you with all kinds of lies and things. Tell folks what's really going on, because you can talk about this firsthand.
Oh, yeah, Malcolm. Actually, the recent report comes from FireEye about this pro-PRC influence campaign. It's the one that organized not just certain group, I mean, from the people. I mean, this is a group that actually organized by the China government to conduct their propaganda. This is the part of their propaganda campaign. And the FireEye report actually take me as an example to explain people what is happening. That is, since I came out, I told people what CCP is doing and what they are covering up, what they are lying about you, lying about to you about the origin of the COVID. China launched such propaganda campaign, which they used it before to, you know, smear and attack the Hong Kong democracy movement. Now they use them to against me. So if you search my name in my Chinese name or English name, and in like many platforms, including YouTube and Twitter and the other forums, you will see that there are numerous of the fake accounts. I mean, they're just maybe zero follower or maybe pretend to be some foreigner using some looks like the foreigner looks picture to make the profile. And they just label my name and put some lies or the cartoon smear me and denying the virus comes from the lab, denying the virus from China, and also attack, including my reputation, including my Yen Report's reputation, and also attack America, like blame America as the origin of the virus. They're doing this like throwing rubbish to you, just they want to block people's patience and people's way to search the real information. If you search it, the first several pages, many tweeters, if you search my name, all full of this. And finally, when you lose your patience, you will give up the chance to look into the truth. That's how China make it.
Yeah, this is a big story, and because it's impacted a lot of these news stories and the cycle, it's massive in size and the scope of what we're talking about here. And I think to identify the problem right now, and thank you for bringing up the point of FireEye. I've read that full report. To understand the problem is important if we're going to fix the problem and understand how they're manipulating the news and using social media platforms and others to put people against people and to get these protests out there and create, how do you say, more division, I guess be the best way to say it, more division in our country. So, now, let me give you a footnote here that's important. Dr. Lee Mengyong, I've asked her to join me on The Voice of a Nation, and you can hear that program on Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 10 p.m. is an encore on America Out Loud Talk Radio. There's a lot more to the story we just talked about. We will discuss there. Also, Dr. Lee Mengyong has been on the forefront of vaccines, vaccination, and booster shots. In fact, she has a current article up about that on America Out Loud, which is entitled, We Need Complete Transparency in Data on the Need for COVID Booster Shots. So you can see that there on AmericaOutLoud.com. Now, we're going to talk about that on The Voice of a Nation, as well as the NIH funding and Fauci. What a great program. Great, great guest. I really thank all of them. Attorney Tom Rentz, Mark Krigorian from the CIS, Fanu Milat, the Afghan interpreter that we talked about, and Dr. Lee Mengyong. Thank you again, my fellow Americans, for joining me on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get out.